great day to you. This is Moses Chav, your host, bringing you again another episode on Suits and Sandals, your leadership and legacy podcast. Today, I'm hosting Motumai Pule from South Africa. He's a branding expert, worked in multiple continents. But today, I'll let him introduce himself because I've sat under him and I've listened a lot of wisdom. I've benefited a lot, but I thought I should host him for the benefit of our audience. So welcome to the podcast, Mr. Motumai.
Thank you, Moses. Thank you, my friend. Much appreciated. Thank you for inviting me to the platform. My name is Motumai Pule. I am South African. I am a husband of but one wife, and I've got two children. I'm living now in Qatar in the Middle East. I've been here for 4 years now. It's been a great privilege of mine, and I had a privilege of working in a couple of countries. Africa, in Tanzania, in Rwanda, I've been to Botswana, I've been to DRC, I have been to Lesotho and Mozambique, and soon I will be going to Nigeria, West Africa, working with Nigeria and Ghana. So that is me. I'm not going to get too much into my professional life in this particular podcast. I'm a man who believes in God. I'm a Christian. I have four things that I always look at when I do any decision. Not even four more, but these are the core. Do I go for easy or do I go for what is courageous? Am I passionate in doing what I'm doing or am I just doing it? Do I love what I do? Do I have the sense of I am doing this and there is meaning in it? And most importantly, am I in alignment with, if it's a company, with a company that I'm working for, if it's a relationship, with the relationship that I'm in, whether it be in marriage, whether it be with my friends, am I in alignment? I never want to feel that I'm in unequal yoke. And I've seen over life that there are certain relationships that naturally will flow off because sometimes we were not aligned, but sometimes just because of that particular relationship came to a natural end, right? So courage, passion, love, and alignment. And there are four values that really I believe I have centered my life around. And now that I have children, one of them is very key. The first one being legacy. Making a meaningful difference in life for my children and for the people that I'm interacting with and the work that I do. I find that is very important. And the older I get, legacy is becoming more and more important. Moses can tell you, I like talking. Sometimes I feel I have so much that I want to give to the world. And I always passionately feel that I need to imprint something that will make a real meaningful difference to people's lives. I don't do very well with general talk. That is just like nothing. I like talking about serious things. So sometimes it can be a little bit boring for most people. So that's legacy. And then excellence. And by excellence, really, it's the habit of winning. Am I winning? If I lose, it's fine. Is there a lesson, though, in that loss? Because that lesson becomes a stepping stone for the next win. The habit of winning, not perfection. Excellence. Whether it be at work, am I giving it my all? Sometimes people think that it's about perfection. No, it's about, did I give everything in me to ensure the task at hand looks glorious as unto the Lord? You know, because if we do anything and we touch things and we don't do them with the spirit of excellence, not perfection again, we miss giving it our best, that glorious giving, that thing that looks like this has been done as unto the master himself. We're talking with Moses earlier on today that one day we will account. And we made a bad joke, and please don't take this seriously. I know some people are going to get all worked up, but do not take it seriously. This is the thing that we're talking about. You know, the world is filled with so many things. People who do things thinking that they're going to live forever. And jokingly, I was saying to Moses and this other friend of mine the other day, saying that, you know, I'm sure God looks down and just goes like, it's okay, they can go around doing all that they do. The truth of the matter is that they are all going to die and they still have to come and account to me. Sometimes we think that God is not moving and he's not doing anything, but God looks down and says that there is a day of reckoning. There is a day when everybody has to account. And because we live, we need to count the number of days. We need to be aware of how much limited time we have. But even the time that we have, how are we accounting for it? Back to excellence. How am I living my life in a way that I can bring before God glory, and I can bring before God an account of my best, not perfection, but of my best. I gave my best in my life. That's excellence. And then respect. You know, this is something that's very important to me. And I don't think I've been the best in life in living this, but it's something that I hold very dear, especially in my relationship with my wife. I keep asking myself, am I loving? Am I honoring? And do I dignify my wife, my friend, or my colleague, even if we're having an argument? Do I leave the other person feeling honored? When they leave my presence, do they leave my presence feeling loved, honored, and dignified? Or do they leave my presence feeling smaller than when they entered my presence? Because many a times we want to win the argument and we want to win the small things and we lose the real thing that is so meaningful. You lose the person, the patient is dead, but you did a great surgery. Mm. You did an excellent job, but the patient lost so much blood in your presence. You're so quick, you're so harsh. So respect of yourself. It says a lot, by the way, when people live small in your presence, about yourself. So respect of yourself and respecting others and being gracious to other people. We are not perfect. Gracious. Are you being gracious? Are you being kind? You know, I'm a very strong person generally. And some people who know me will know that I'm very strong. I had to learn this. And I had to really, even before I got married to my wife, I remember keep on saying to her, love, honor, and dignify. I've seen so many cases, even of couples where the other couple, the other part in this relationship, and it has been both men and women, they leave the presence of the other feeling smaller. Oh, look, fix yourself. Oh, look at that wig. Oh, just get yourself together. You know, so dignify, honor, love, respect the other person. In your workplace, it's not always about being right. It's about how do you get yourself. Diplomacy is very important in all forms of. You can still get there, but don't lose the people when you get there. A leader has to make decisions, sometimes tough decisions. It's not always easy. But do you believe that you have done it honorably? You may not. The other party does not always have to agree with you. This is not the point, you know. And then passion. I'm very, very passionate. I'm an optimist. Everything for me is going to be right. I'm a serial optimist to a fault, and I am aware of that. So I believe in the greatness of Africa. I believe that Africa is going to be great, and I believe great days are ahead, and God has marked Africa for greatness. We are just going through the birth pains of the greatness of this continent. I believe in it. I know it will happen, as I know myself is Motsamai Pule, the son of Mosianedi Ahos Pule. I believe this. We have greatness and we will achieve greatness. It is coming. It is already here. The restoration of the continent of Africa. So that's my passion. So That's basically me. As you can tell, I talk a lot. So Moses, I think that was supposed to be 2 seconds. I think I'm done now, man. You know.
That's why I just backed out and just let you to roll. And this is how it's supposed to be. Thank you so much for sharing your heart. This is so deep, Mots. And as I was listening to you, I see a foundation, which is basically that background and history of an African child. You know how we grow up, most of us. There could be some who are obviously what you yourself call cheese babies. But most of us, to be honest, we grew up in obscurity, and support from parents would not even have been enough. But with all that around us, the reality of life, I know you're coming from a place where you had to support your family from a very tender age, where you had to help your enterprising mom. Can you share a little bit of your childhood experiences and the life lessons derived from that season of life?
Man, my childhood, it's a story on itself. So out of the 9 children, God took away 2 and we were left 7 of us. My father was working, I lived in a mining village in South Africa called Welkom. Mining village, but mining town, maybe it's not a village really. Mining town called Welkom. My father was an ambulance driver. He was really earning really peanuts, to be honest. And there is 7 children who, and all of this mouth needed to be fed, needed to be schooled. We never really went to bed with nothing. But, you know, my mother was married very young. My father was 21. My mom was 16 when they got married. And in those days, it was normal for a girl of 16 to get married. And it was always seen as she's married now, which is like a great honor versus she's, you know, she's not necessarily married. The earlier you get married, the better. So my mom, I always say that had she finished school and followed some of her dreams, she could have been one of the great women leaders in the country. So she taught us very early to hustle. So we grew up. I remember I had money that I was given. I think I had 12 rands. And then I told my mom I want to buy eggs so that I can go sell them in the mine and close to where we live, because we lived in this little mining village where people live next to the mining. In the mine, there were hostel dwellers, thousands of men who came from across the continent, actually. We had people from Mozambique, I think even from Malawi, probably a lot from Zambia, and obviously a lot of the rural provinces of South Africa and Lesotho. So you go there, sell your food and fruits, etc. So I grew up doing that. And I started with 12, a dozen of eggs cooked with a salt shaker, and people will come by. And when I started, I thought, this is great. I'm going to make money. I can lay by stuff that I want to lay by, clothes, etc. Later on, it became like, now I'm tired, but I have to do it, because my mom was like, after school, I didn't play a lot. After school, it was eat, go and sell, come back with money. So what it instilled in me was the discipline of getting things done. Getting things done. In the words of Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, as the British people will say, the Duke of Edinburgh, is to say, get on with it.
Mm.
A sense of duty. The sense of duty. You got to get things done. Not everything you're going to like, whether it be at work. I spoke about love and passion. Trust me, love and passion sometimes comes after you have gotten the sense of duty. Getting on with things, whether it be menial things that you are feeling like, this is just too much admin. I want to be on the driving seat, making decisions. It's not always about the boardroom. There's a lot of admin. Getting things done, whether you are in the royal house like the Duke of Edinburgh, or you are a cleaner, there is always an admin. Don't let anybody, that's why I didn't even tell you about what I do. It is not important about what I do. It is not critical about what I do. It's about, am I doing something that will get things done? And I remember again, with excellence. So I got that. I got that, that this eggs needs to be not too cooked, because my customers don't like them when they are overly cooked. So The time of boiling them was important, how long I boil them, and to ensure if I have leftovers when I come back home, I can't sell those leftovers tomorrow, excellence, because my customers are not going to be happy. I'm not going to have repeat customers. You know, after school, I will have to, later on in life, I started having to sell the potatoes and the cabbage in this very village where I'm in, I will pass some of my classmates who were playing soccer in the streets while I am about selling this. I started learning the skill of dealing with customers, being rejected, learning how to deal with all of that admin in and of myself, very young one. And it's only later on now that I'm older that I realized that I had to deal with this. So negotiation skill, all of disciplines. I don't think my mother was intending for that. But in the bigger scheme of things, God knew the providence of the divine providence. God knew that I would learn certain disciplines. So my upbringing was like that. I'm one of seven alive, obviously third. And when you're the middle child, there's a lot of things that you're dealing with. This young siblings and the older ones, and you're constantly trying to be a peacemaker or trying to, you know, sometimes you have to, you know, deal with a lot of identity issues. And it has done me very well working in various environments and now being in the Middle East, working with all these nationalities. So that's me, Moss.
And it's just a rich background. Now I'm just thinking how we despise the humble beginnings. Do not despise the humble beginnings. Because who would have thought that a young boy running these errands for his mom would actually be groomed like how David was groomed during the railing of the ship. So you were being groomed to have those attributes of customer service, excellence, respect, and the self-control of saying that I will do this for my mom, although I have the opportunity to dump the basket and go play football or soccer with my friends. That's just impeccable. Only that these things happen years later. When you look back, you go like, oh, wow, that was God propelling me. But I believe that's what God is still doing now. Like even in your season in the 40s, there'll be things that when you are at 70, you go like, wow, in my 40s, God allowed me to go through this so that I could be productive at this age. It's just mind blowing.
Absolutely. You know, Moses, it's this thing. This is why the book has so much to offer the world. You know, and sometimes you want to pick and choose what feels right. God gives us very clearly a lot of principles. One of them is this thing of being faithful with little. And this year in particular, I mean, we spoke about this the other day, this issue around being faithful with little and the discipline of sometimes sitting through things that you don't quite want to sit through, but being reliable, being resolute, being present, and being faithful with little, ruler over much. I've been part of a meeting that go on every day in Zoom, and sometimes you're tired from work. You have to be in these meetings day in and day out. And there is a discipline in that. And you should never take for granted those disciplines of being present and forcing yourself to sit down, listen, go through the rigor. Because those things teach you and your body certain discipline necessary for the greatness that God will bestow on you because you are faithful with little. It is so important. I mean, this is beyond time to record, by the way. This is, you got to sit down. We didn't graduate and get the degrees by not sitting down. We had to attend school from grade one all the way, back in the days. From grade one now, all the way to grade 12, and apply, sit down, apply, go to university. You think you know everything. No, you don't know everything. You know, faithful with little, ruler over much. But you're faithful with little and ruler over much. It's not always lording it over. God has a way of making sure that everybody will still be humble enough to know you are not it. You know, you are not it. So it's not always about, oh, I'm going to be the CEO. I know everybody feels that I want to be. Oh, I'm going to run my own business. Oh, no. Not everybody's going to get there. Again, it's about your peace, doing it excellently. And then God knows who can carry. I can never carry what Moses has. I know, sitting here, I don't have what Moses has. Moses has a greatness that he has, that God has called him for. and he has this capacity to do so many things. I don't have that capacity. I can grow in that capacity, but I'm not given that. So it's not all about, oh, but no, I want to be the same thing. I want to be the same as the next person. It's about being you and fully you, but being truly faithful with what you are given and giving your best all. Who knows, you may actually become the ruler overmuch.
Yeah. That's lots of ancient wisdom, man. And quite a sense of humility from you, touting how others are better. And yet all of us, and most of us know, that Motsamai is a well, a deep well of wisdom, that only if you can sit and listen, you benefit and draw the wisdom from. Mots, there's one particular interesting thing about our lives, that despite all this background and then the rich understanding that mostly comes from the word of God, or it could be friends around us, but we end up sometimes falling into the trap of losing focus, and we want to get everything else but life itself. And of course, like, everyone has a justification for why they have to rush towards the things of the world, the next big thing, everything that will make you happy. But what has been your life lessons when it comes to the subject of acquiring things and trimming your appetites? I want you to address this from a unique tangent, because I know that as Moses, there are things that I'm pursuing. There are things that I can never just hold myself back from, because I still want to achieve. I want to live well. I want to leave an inheritance. But you know where I'm coming from. How can we hold ourselves back and be disciplined to achieve without destroying our lives and allowing these strange appetites to dominate our lives?
I think, Moss, it's a big subject. And I grapple with this a lot. And I have tried to make meaning of what is this thing. You know, the first time I bought a car, it was a Polo VW 2-liter. Very proud of myself. And I was driving home to go show my parents with pride that finally I have arrived. And I have by then worked for 4 years. That's 4 years of working without a car. And most of my friends, remember, I'm a graduate. I'm supposed to walk out of university and walk into a car and a big house. The dreams that we had in our laptops or in our computer or things that we've seen, you know, the Insta-ready photos that we had in our minds. Instagram was not there back then, but anyway. So, and then while I'm driving, number one, I was driving around so aware of other Polos and so aware of, okay, mine is a 2-liter. Mine is better, comparison. You know, I was grappling with this material thing that I thought was a milestone and an achievement, but I was like grappling with the issues in my heart that I probably was not so aware of that I have. And in the middle of that, I truly believe that it was God saying, this is just a thing. And he reminded me of that scripture that says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things will be added unto you. Think about that. And God said, it's a thing. Yes, it feels, but it's a thing. Years later, this thing had an accident. I still remember it was on the back of the car. I was rushing somewhere. Somebody hit me and I was furious and then stayed for a very long time in that car. And I grappled with the fact that my car has a dent, has scratches. And God reminded me, I told you it's a thing.
Yep.
If you take this thing so important in your life and becomes part of your identity, it is just a thing. It is not the end and be all in and of itself. So the things, Moses, are there to help us fulfill the journey, fulfill the divine plan that God has for our lives. The thing is not the end in and of itself. And the thing does not make you. In the image of God, he created them, not the thing. And the things are there to accomplish purpose, divine plan of God over our lives. Got to differentiate the two. So we come from all the sorts of backgrounds. And I think truly, when people don't have a vision, we cast off any form of restraints.
Yeah.
And we take on any form. If you don't stand for anything, you fall for everything, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. If you don't stand for anything, you fall for everything. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of the everything. There is a lot of those things. And we begin to think, oh, but this I need, because this, this is the thing. What is your vision? You have a big house? Is that a vision? Really? Is having a nice car a vision? Really? Oh, think about that. Because then once you have it, so what? Now you have it. This was your vision. Your life was all about having a big house. So you got it. Your life was all about having a big car. So now you have it. What are you chasing? The awareness of that is very important, because then you got to ask yourself, am I truly living my life, or am I living a life? Again, what is your legacy? What is your legacy? What are you leaving behind? What is the meaningful difference? Meaningful difference. Are you living so much for yourself that you have forgotten what your life is all about? A big house? You know, there's nothing wrong with a big house. But if your vision is so consumed about the things and you forget about there is a greatness in you that is bigger than the things that are supposed to help you get to the greatness. A car is supposed to take you to the next meeting, to the next thing where you are solving real world issues. It's nice to be comfortable in that car. Absolutely. Get the one that will be comfortable in so that you arrive safe. So you don't arrive there and then you are sweating. You can't even focus in the meeting. It must have an aircon, absolutely. You know, so it's really about, for me, most, it's about being aware of what are these things. I always go to this point in my conversation with myself and with many people. I met the Maasai when I was in Tanzania. Those great people who are amazing, and as a culture, it's a beautiful culture. These people, Moses, even as I've spoken to you before, they dress the same way every day. They don't smell, no. They dress clean, but it's the same material every day, in and out, same thing, and super generous. Because I visited one, but what do you consider in his home, beautiful heart, and his wife had just had a baby. This man was so generous to me because I wanted to understand his culture. He gave me some of the cloths, and you could see with love, and they were clean. With love, he was giving me these things. He was not tied to, oh, but I can't give my cloth. He was like, take, you know, this is how you put it on. You know, I still have those cloths to this day. But the Maasai have not drunk, even though the civilization that we believe is the best thing now has been encroaching into them, but they have stuck to their culture. They are all about cows. For them, wealth is in the cows, and they do so many things using the cows, and then they look after the environment so well. They understand their understanding of land and how to take care of the world around them is so rich. So I really believe that we were so in the industrialization of the continent of Africa, we were truly taken out of the way of life that was rich, that was fuller. And I do believe that it was not so focused on the things like it is today. I'm sure there was an element of it, but not as way it is. We were given an opium that is so difficult to get out of, the opium of materialism. We were taken out of the land and we were taken to the cities to drive the industrialization, work in the mines, give them enough money so that they keep coming back. Give them a loan so that they are stuck and they never want to stop working because they have to pay back the loan for the house that now they have to live in because they have left their rural homes. Teach them about the essence of wearing shoes, of having nice clothes. So our parents, I always imagine this scenario of these neighbors. One works in the cities, one doesn't. And then the one in the cities comes back with all of these nice things. Now the wife of the one from the city is now wearing a nice dress. The one who works the land, who was never really into things, the wife says, so-and-so's children has nice dress. So-and-so has, you also better go and get these things that they are bringing from wherever they bring them. We were taught to believe that having cash in your hand, it is the best thing because this thing gives you all of these things. But what we're not realizing is that the thrill of the opium, the thrill is what is going to kill us in the long run, because now we are so self-absorbed with the things. Corruption is driven by the things. All of the problems that we have, if you really look at them, Moses, and they call these things. Why are African leaders so self-absorbed and not focusing on the people and the plight? People will die. Hospitals will not have oxygen in these days of COVID while somebody is busy taking money out of the system for themselves so that I can have a bank somewhere in Swiss bank. I can have a house in Spain next to the beach. My children, the legacy of the greater good of your people. When we were sent out of the villages where we come from, the village, it used to be, in some of the situations, used to be a celebration. So-and-so's son is going to study, to become whatever teacher, to become, but it was a call. I will come and teach my people. I will come and be a doctor and heal. Go, my son, and be so that you can come back and heal us, teach us for the greater good. Come and lead us, solve our challenges for the greater good of everybody, not of myself. And that was the essence. That's why even you find that white people are not so obsessed sometimes with material things the way we are. Oh yes, they also have their backing, but not the same way. People who are really wealthy, they are not stuck with what label they are wearing. We all know this. We've seen it over and over. You know, Bill Gates obsessed about what shirt he's wearing today. He's not stuck with what car am I driving today. He's busy trying to solve world issues. Like meaningful things. You don't have these people worried about the details. Us, the people who are here, stuck with our opium self, we are sniffing this thing to become something that we are not. You know, I use this phrase, try to happen. I'm also this thing. No. Cool down. Look at what is going on around you. You have been sniffing material things. We compromise on the greater vision. We are eating the money that our grandchildren should be having at the altar of greatness, of immediate greatness, instant greatness. I need to become today. It does not matter what will happen to my grandchildren. You know why some of the white people are still looking like they're wealthy and you can never know where they get the money? It looks like they're always wealthy. They always have money. I don't know how, but they always have money. It's because of legacy. Over and over, they have been saving and putting money aside. Not all of them, some of them. The principles around money, around the economics that we are dealing with today, if we don't get our head around it, our children's children, they can be educated, but they will still come to the land of the Arabs to work instead of working in the land of their fathers and being princes and being princesses, kings and queens in their own land, being respected, walking with honor in their own land. They will go educated, doctors, and be the servants of other nations. If we don't get this thing in our heart and in our mind, we will continue to be the workforce for other people versus being the builders of our own nations. Oh God, I'm talking good. If we don't get this, the continent will be stuck around the issues. We cannot be working for a car when my children one day, they can never really fully live and be my grandchildren. That's what I'm thinking about today. I think about I am saving for my grandchildren, not even my children. My children have to think about saving for their own grandchildren. This is the legacy I want to leave. That's why I will not have a BMW today, because it's not the destiny of my life to drive a BMW. It is the destiny of my grandchildren to manufacture a car that is luxurious in the continent. I want them to be bigger than myself. I don't want them to be obsessing about the German models. I want them to be obsessing about creating an excellent vehicle that will drive the presidents and the kings of the continent. Ooh, God Almighty. This is what we need to be doing. So when we are busy saying, oh, I am the greatest thing. Now you are eating. You are eating the things that your grandchildren should be walking into glory with. When are we going to be great when we are busy eating the seeds? This is what God told me one day. He said that, you know what, for every harvest day, you save the great seeds, best seeds. You save them for the next season of planting. No, we are busy eating every seed. Every seed we eat today, because Mina, I am obsessed of looking good in front of my friends. I need to be looking good. At the core of all of this nonsense that we go through is me looking better than Moses. Mm-hmm. Think about it. It is the problem that we need to be dealing with. Why do I want to look better than Moses? Instead of saying, God, I want greatness. I want Moses to be great. I want Moses and his grandchildren to be great. I want those to be kings and queens in their own right, so that they can run the affairs of their nation, fully run their affairs and be knowledgeable. No, we are taking anybody who wants to come to our continent. No, the Chinese are now coming and taking over. We all know they have been coming. What can you give us? Ooh, we're so excited. Hey, thank you. They gave us money, and then you are giving them land. Boom, land is gone. We are signing things that we don't even understand, because they come and then they show you a nice photo. This is the story. We've seen this picture. I don't know the story about that picture, but I'm just going to use it because it's a good example. On the side of the table, there are the Chinese with papers and everything in their hands focused. On the other side is our own black people looking at their phones, excited. Nobody's serious about what is going on in this meeting, but the Chinese are serious about documenting everything. Who knows, in that meeting, probably they were given an Oppo. Oppo is a nice phone. Oppo, not even a Samsung or anything. Oppo. They were given an Oppo. I'm sure they were like, ooh, do you have another one for my wife? And they were excited about the material things, the thing. They forgot about what are we doing here. The Chinese have not forgotten about why they are there on that table. It is for the greater good of China. Tina, no. I'm thinking about my wife, not even about our people. I am there for the greatness of the continent, not to come and be excited about an Oppo. God help us. If we can get it the way God wants us to get it, we will never again be beggars, but we will be the people who distribute greatness to others.
Amen to that.
Our children will be princesses and the princes that they deserve to be.
Well said, Motz. That's a deep preach that gets into the years ahead. So for those who are able to listen, to hear, and grasp the wisdom, we can now run with the baton without being left behind or without feeling hidden in the mess of what's going on right now. So we can all actually come to the surface and see what God has really destined for us, for the continent, and for the posterity. Now, like, there'll be someone somewhere, they have lived their life, they have gone through the mess of bank loans, so credit and everything else, just to prove to be where they are. That's another cohort that pretty much you have also addressed in your talk, Mots. But there's another side, like someone would say, there's a deep reality of black tax on the continent. Like, sons and daughters have to take care of not just their parents, because it's honorable to do so, but their extended families, that you're trying to earn something to help your immediate family, but there's an extended family. So as much as we can agree that taking care of our parents is very honorable and God commands us to do that, there are weaknesses in the current system that we failed to address early on. And for some people, this actually continues to become unsustainable. It becomes so frustrating. They can't save what they are earning through a salary. Remember, they are not investing to get more. They get paid after they have worked 30 days, and pretty much more than 30% of what they've earned has to go to help people, all right? And this actually gets us back into a spiral of poverty, and their children may not really have sufficient savings or reserves of what their parents have earned over the time. So without neglecting the greater need of taking care of our parents, our siblings, or taking care of widows and orphans, which is the true religion, how can we truly navigate or come up with a better system that helps us to be cautious, that save something for a rainy day, save something for the generations, and don't waste it. And at the same time, how can we now speak to the people who are also dependent on the people who are earning somewhere?
I will start this in line with what we just spoke about, and just use this scripture in Proverbs that says, a good person or a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the sinner's wealth is laid up for the righteous. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. There is an obligation for you to leave an inheritance for your children's children. Equally so, a good religion is not so much that we are always giving and giving to the widow and even the orphan while our parents don't have anything. You know, even in Christendom, many people will give to the men of God, but they don't even take care of their own families. It's critical. So I'm clear, for me, the primary mandate, it is my children's children, because the older will pass on soon. I honor the older so that my grandchildren will know that they have grandparents that were taken care of, that lived a dignified life. So I will honor them. But my greatest responsibility is for the greatness of those that are yet to come, of laying a strong foundation for them. And I am that foundation. But this foundation would have also honored those before me. Yes, I will look after my family. Yes, I will send money home, which I do. I was having this discussion with a friend of mine, and he was saying, I actually wanted to build a big house for my parents. And unfortunately, he lost his mom recently. And he was saying, you know, because we've spoken about this discussion, to say sometimes we put money into the wall. That money that you've put on the wall, building a big house, it will never work for you anymore. For example, we like our rural homes, and we believe that rural homes must be great and big. And many people have built amazing rural homes in memory of our parents. Rural homes, most of the times, they don't give you a return. You can't put them in the same league as the homes in the cities, where when you sell it, you can sell it at a higher price, and you can have some form of returns. Let's say I build a nice big house in rural home, and I'm building this for my parents. Yes, that's great. But once your parents pass on in 10, 20 years' time, who's going to be left in that home? You know what I mean? You build this great grandeur of a home because you wanted to honor your parents. Great. But could you have done a good, dignified home for them without overspending? And again, we are doing it for people, or are you really trying to give them a dignified home? This is the balance that we need to, for me, I believe you have to measure. Many people have left these great homes. Now they need to have somebody to look after that home because you don't go there every time. You only go there once a year. You know, not all of us can afford to build that great home and still also invest properly for our children's children. Not all of us can balance it properly. And sometimes you find that even in relationships, there's this great conflict between the husband and the wife because the husband is so obsessed about building the parents' home. I need my mom worked very hard for me, blah, 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 blah. I believe that give them a dignified home, enough for them. You don't have to have this big of a house and invest so much money into this brick and mortar and not have enough for your children. And again, you cannot be giving your family everything. You end up not having enough for your children because you feel indebted to your parents all the time. Everybody believes that now you are the budget keeper. You are the one who can, they manage their budgets through you. When they need everything, they say, oh, can you give me this money? I don't have airtime. Or everybody keeps calling you. You need to budget how much you give to your family and balance it with how much giving is good. Please give to your family. Balance it with, am I investing enough for my children's future? And is my family also living well right now? Sometimes the equation is not really right. You find that most people, they give so much home, they starve in the present. And then you end up having these conflicts where your current family, your primary family, wife and children, they end up not, especially your wife, in the case of a husband, they end up not having a good relationship with their in-laws because you as a husband or the wife has become a problem of money is leaking home versus taking care of us in the future. That equation, you need to balance it properly. Don't allow people to use guilt. Most of the time we are guilt-ridden because your mom will tell you, I educated, I gave you the other education. Yes, mom, you did. Thank you very much. Your grandchildren will live very well in the future. You need to remind them of that. I will take care of you enough, but this is the budget you have to live with. I don't have excessive money. I don't have food. I don't have this. I am so, treat your parents sometimes as they are also individuals. As much as you love them, sometimes they can also manipulate you. This is the issue. And people must get that around themselves. They can manipulate you for their own instant gratification. Oh, I gave you the best education. No, you gave me so that I can be able to stand among the people and be. So it's a topic when somebody told me about that it's all about your children's children, I struggled with. I said, I must take care of my parents until I really got around it. And I'm the one, I speak as a person who had to, by the grace of God, buy my parents a home. By the grace of God, still take care of them now. Most of my siblings are still staying there. I'm still the one who still sends money home. But practically, I have realized that you create a dependency that is actually not necessarily what is supposed to be yours fully. Sometimes we take on more than we are supposed to take on. So be aware of how much you give and put that on a leash. Put this whole situation on a leash, otherwise it gets out of control. One of my sisters, and even if she listens to this, she'll be fine. She's okay. She said to me, oh, but you are working. She was asking me for something. She was like, but you are working. I said, but I don't have what you're asking me. But you are working. As if, you know, I'm supposed to just have it because I'm working. So it's a thing that you need to balance off. Teach them to fish. Teach them to fish. And they know how to fish. And sometimes you have to remember that the family that don't have you as a source of income, how are they actually surviving? And they're not always like now hungry and in poverty stricken. They're actually surviving. People learn how to survive without you. If you die today, what's going to happen? You know, do you have enough for your children? Are the children covered? This is what the whole financial planning. Do you have life covered? Do you have enough savings? Blah, blah, blah. All of these things you have to consider. Guys, it is the reality. You can't overly spend on your family because most of the time, because of guilt. Yes, sometimes it's gratitude. Yes, but confine it to a percentage of your total income. How much of this total income is actually going to be invested in my family? And how much is going to be invested in us right now to live and also in the future? We can't be everything. This point is just a painful point, but many times when I say it, people get all emotional. I'm speaking as the one who is living it every day. Black tax, as some people would like to call it, is taking care of your family, but do it reasonably within what you believe. Your greatest need is legacy, people. Me, it is about, that's why your values will define what you do. Me, it's about legacy. But I'm also not gonna overly spend now and make the house that I bought and make it now a palace. You know, I wanted my mother because my mother took care of me. I want to build her a palace. But can you afford to build a palace? If you can, absolutely do the great thing that you want to do, but is it within your means? But are you also compromising on the future of your children and children's children? But I'm giving my children good schooling. Yeah, we got a good schooling, but we are working for other nations now. We are working for other nations. I'm in the Middle East. I can't even buy a property here that can be in my name. I can't be anything in this country but a servant. Oh, but I'm a manager. You are still a servant. You know, so education in and of itself, when you don't have the means, you cannot be in charge and be in control. Education is good, but you need to leave enough for your children so that they can dream in their own land where they can be dignified. So save for your children. Don't overly spend on your parents. Spend enough for them to survive and live a good life. But do they now need to live way better than they're supposed to? It is an individual decision that needs to be made. Honestly, that's where I have arrived to. For me, my children's children are very critical on my agenda, legacy. legacy, but I would have honored my parents. My mom and my dad know very well that I have honored them so much, but I'm not overly going to be spending there. Honor them, absolutely. My siblings, absolutely, will help them to get the best that they can get if they know what they want to do. It's a painful thing.
Well said, Mot. It's a tough topic that most people don't want to get into. I believe you've addressed it well, and we are all learning. It's a forever process. Whether you're living outside your country or you are working in your country, we all face these realities. Beyond parents, you have siblings, and it just needs lots of wisdom to navigate the element of being able to give and being supportive, but at the same time, not eating the seed, as you addressed in the previous talk as well. Not eating the seed that is meant to benefit your children and the generations to come. So, Mot, I know I've held you for the longest time. I enjoy actually listening to you talk and share wisdom, but there's one more question that I want to bring to the table. So we usually talk about nation building. We talk about responsibility to our countries or to the continent. I believe in my heart of hearts that we have a massive responsibility to contribute towards nation building. And we cannot just look at a cluster of my family or my extended family without considering community and the country at large. So can you think of ways that anyone, or especially aspiring servant leaders, whether in the corporate space or in the public space, indeed taking on a political office, that we can adopt or practice to ensure that we are collectively making a positive impact on our nations?
Also another great topic, and it would be interesting to hear what others think on this topic. The principle of faithful with little is critical because you have to be patient with yourself. And if you think generationally, you can be very comfortable with what you are able to do, what others are able to do, and what the next generations will be able to achieve. Be patient with yourself, because if you're not patient with yourself, you will get tired. You know, especially the diasporas, you know, I'm going to go back home, I'm going to. Be patient with yourself. And your timelines that you give yourself on what you want to achieve, it's not an overnight. You're going to deal with issues that people who have stayed back home had to deal with every day. And the demons we are fighting are serious. You know, selfishness and corruption are big, big issues that we are dealing with. Power, the obsession with power and control are big issues. So be patient with yourself and start where you are. And then walk the walk and trust God to influence and be influenced with things that will solve the challenges that we have. I really believe for me, it's about starting small. I'm passionate about farming, but farming with a remote control is very difficult being here in the Middle East. But I do believe that there is something that God has given us, and that thing is the land in the continent. Yes, the global warming and the challenges that come with it are real, but we can do the small. For somebody who works in a job that does not pay much, I always say to people, I say, you know, it's just buying that one goal for the development of your own family. Let's take it all the way down to the micro level. You want to have enough tomorrow, buy one goal today with the little that you have, you can afford. It's not about having a head of goats. Buy one today. There's enough grass in most places. And then that goat will give you goats and a head over time. It's the principle of investing, right? And it will have compound interest. Yeah. Because those goats will now become many, many goats. You know, and then one day when you now want to build a house, when you want to do certain things, you can go back into the head, take 2, 4, 5, sell, have cash enough to do certain things. COVID has taught us that this economy that we have is actually not stable when it is facing serious challenges. You know, that goat can also give you milk. You know, it can give you meat for protein and all of those things. That piece of land, when you look after it with all of this permaculture principles, all of these things, you can actually get that land to work for you and feed your family and take them out of the poverty of the stomach. You know, Rwanda is an example. Rwanda, I was there in 2012, beautiful country. And I remember driving around thinking, there is actually no poverty of the stomach here, it's just resources that are needed. Because these people don't have need for food. They are not hungry for food. You work and look after the land, you always harvest. So it starts there. Do I have the basics right? Let me do what I can do in my own space and then go to the next level. Okay, now we are all planting all of these things. Can we now collectively work with my neighbors and then build it up, scale it up to say, guys, if we can all plant cassava, you know, we can sell this cassava. And after selling this cassava, we can collectively have enough money. Our children don't always have to go into the cities, live in the small little spaces and struggle for few shillings. They can work here and export this to the cities. Our children can live well within our own communities. And then you can also start thinking about the money that you make. Don't buy the Mercedes Benz. Take that money, buy a truck that you will need to transport the cassava to where it will be further processed. In future, generationally again, in future, when these children understand this thing and they are now strong enough and the economics are good, you'll get to a point where you can actually locally process the cassava into all manner of things that it can be processed into. It's about give the people cast off restraints, because when you have a vision of, but why are you saying let's plant cassava and use our land for cassava, is because we are seeing a time when we can be this. On and on and on and on and on and on, Moses. Once we teach people the principle, this is, for me, development is as basic as that. Is that a collective of people working together. And you don't even have to have a company and have this formal structure that are heavy. Just say, guys, you plant so many hectares. It's easy for our sons and daughters. They are educated. They can now sign the contracts. They can formalize all of these things. They can agree with the people that they are selling to. This is what we will give you so much tonnage of cassava. You know, X amount of hectares can give you so much tonnage of cassava that you can give to those people at X amount. You are becoming competitive. And then you can find ways. You buy the machinery in China. Yes, buy it in China for now because you don't have manufacturing. But in future, we should make some of these machines for processing things here locally in Africa. We can do these things, but we are so obsessed with, oh, I've got an Italian suit. Oh, I've got this. Look at me. This one, I got this from Italy. Really? We are excited about the Italian material versus thinking about how do we make our own? We are the biggest consumer of things in the continent, and we don't manufacture things, but we have massive arable lands. You know, I got this shoe, bro, from Turkey. Turkey makes nice. And by the way, they make a lot of good stuff. But they stopped buying from Italy. They are making their own thing. You know, those cows that we have, that cow hide, what are we doing with it? Ethiopians are very good with leather, by the way. I'd rather go buy that leather from Ethiopia and make some of the great shoes in the continent. Obsessed about perfecting the art of manufacturing within the continent and stop buying secondhand things from outside of the continent. I am so glad that Rwanda decided to come out of that. Some of the great leaders we have in the continent who make decisions, tough decisions, but that work for the continent. Stop buying the secondhand because we want instant gratification. I've got this nice shoe. I've got this nice jacket. But you got it from where? How does this help the greater good of the continent? So we can make our own clothes that fits our environment, that fits our own climate. There's so many of these things. No, we want to wear a tie and be heavy and you are boiling. Ties work in the UK is cold most of the time. Let's find our way of this is a formal work clothes that fits our culture. That speaks to us, dignified, but fits us. And what is dignity according to us? Let's look at that. Those things are, but you have the luxury of even looking at those high tertiary issues when you have worked the basics properly. The land, number one, make the land work for you and learn how you work that land. Some of these multinationals, the Unilevers of this world, they sell soap. Do you know how much of that so we can make from the land? How did they become Unilever? How much can you do with goat milk when you have data, which at least enough of our young people have access to data? Instead of trying to become the next Instagram celebrity, you can YouTube so much knowledge without even going to any university and learn the basics of doing things and begin to employ people. How many have done that? We can count. So there is no economy without square meter. You were talking to me the other day, Moses, and it hit me so hard about real estate. The reason why it's called real estate, because it is real. There is a square meterage that can never cease to exist. Therefore, it seems to me that there is no economics without a square meterage. And until we understand land and the importance, not cash, land first, whoever controls the land has the power, truly power. We have that. Majority of the continent has land. Then we begin to say, okay, guys, we are going to stop. We are going to start. And what is that stop and start is what each and every nation can define. But for me, it always goes back to the land. It always goes back to this ground that we have. When we use it and we become good stewards of it, we can truly become rulers that we are meant to be. As simple as that. And God will give each and every person the understanding of what that does really mean. That is why I don't want to buy a Mercedes Benz, because I know there's so much that I can do with that money. Buy the tractor instead of the Mercedes Benz, because that tractor is going to help you and the community. You can still rent it out to the community. I'm not saying it become a just unnecessary. No, people who are willing to pay. People sometimes are saying, I've got all of this land, but I don't have the tractor because I don't have the cash. I come with a Mercedes Benz, driving a nice Mercedes Benz to a village. I'm inspiring young people to do what? To buy and enrich the Germans. I'm inspiring, we must drive well and inspire the young people. No. You got it wrong, because you are giving them the wrong inspiration and the opium that has been killing us for all of these years. Give them the right inspiration and give them the work so that they can build our rural towns, dude. It can be known, this is a tomato thing. These guys are big on citrus. These guys are big on cotton. These guys are big on cassava. These ones are big on this. We can become hubs. We are in agriculture market generally. Yes, we've got gold and all this amazing stuff. And you know, when I realized this and it hit me that God was just saying, Mot, I've given my people everything they need.
Yeah.
If you talk about gold and other stuff, there's a lot of complicated issues that you go into. There is so much red tape. But the ground to plant things and grow things, there's not a lot of complicated stuff. Anybody can start that easy. But to start the mining, you need a lot of money, number one, et cetera, et cetera. But we can get there. Faithful with little, it is as easy as that. Is it easy to walk the path? No. But guys, we are already in trouble. If we don't start today, why do we stop and start? Stop thinking the way you've been thinking. Do not conform to the pattern that you have been taught. Renew your mind concerning this thing that you're trying to get to yourself, this thing that you're trying to enrich yourself with, because they don't really do you good. They are temporal. A nice Mercedes today is gone tomorrow. A tractor that you buy today will always work for you for 100 years. Literally, it can work. If that tractor survives, it can survive all the way to 100 years if you treat it well. But in the process of those 100 years, the first 10, even 5-10 years, it will do you so good that many lives will have changed around you. And you will have set a good example. This is what we do. We bring things that develop us, not things that impoverish us, and not things that make you look much more important than everybody else. We bring things to our communities that adds value. We don't set the wrong example of German cars at the best, Italian suits at the best. At the funeral, you're trying to become the most important person. Nonsense. Yes, you need to look at your best, but why do you want to be better than everybody else? Sometimes that's why uniforms are better. Look at the Maasai. The rich among them, you don't even see, because they're all just dressed amazingly the same. Beautiful people of God. The Arabs, you will never know who is rich among them. They wear their thobes and their gutra. Look amazing, but they're same set. And trust me, they are loaded. Oil money, gas money, all manner of loadedness. And we are nothing close to them today, but we have the biggest land in the country. We have oil, we have all of this that they actually have. We have them plus. But we are poor. Moses, let's talk about, and I know time is up. For anybody yes. who will hear this, can they think about how much money have we given to the appetites we have versus money that we could have used to develop our communities? The cities where we live and the lifestyle that we live. Oh, I'm going to Italy for a holiday, to Rome. Yes, absolutely. Explore the world. Do all that you need to do. But guys, what are we doing? Our children are going to struggle in the future because we are not gearing ourselves to rule. We are gearing ourselves to continually be servants, be looking for jobs. We are not setting our children to rule. We keep on going back to this thing of give your money to all of these appetites. When are we ever going to rule if we think the vision I need to give people and they need to dream bigger is to show them a Mercedes-Benz and a BMW? Why do you think that is the dream that they are supposed to have? A BMW? It was a dream, yes, but it has made you more, much poorer. Because if this job that you have today, because of COVID stops, you don't have money to even pay. You have to sell it to somebody, sometimes even the lowest bidder. And you are thinking, I don't have anything. I need to sell this thing. Many, many have suffered through this pandemic. And most of the time, and some people are still holding up. Oh, I need to keep my house. It's tough. It's tough, Moses.
Oh, man. No, that's... I always quote ancient wisdom because truth can never be changed. Like truth, people can try to twist it, but it remains the truth. That's why even if someone wants to go the other direction, they would actually hit a wall or get into the sea, swim back. They'll find truth standing like a statue in the same place and say, this was said and it is as it is. It's up to us to listen. I appreciate how you've poured out yourself. And I've always heard this from you. I've always fed from this. But I wanted the world to actually get this message. I know that there could be multiple platforms where people address these issues. But there's always that one place that gets to interface with that one person, and they're going to be changed forever. If not them, then their children. If not their children, then the next generations will be changed with such an ancient message of wisdom. So, Motz, thank you so much. I don't know if you still have anything remaining on you.
To be honest, my hope and prayer is that this discussion and many others that will come from this platform will inspire us to think differently and spawn a lot of other thoughts that will help us to achieve the true greatness. You know, once we learn the stops and starts, this is what I stop now, this is what I start. Some of these things are very difficult, even with myself. I speak a lot about these things because of the awareness of what dangers they have caused me. I speak against loans as an example, money. Oh, I'm going to get a loan to do this. Nobody has no loan in the world. It's okay when you're buying a house to have a loan because not everybody can have access to capital. And obviously, you need a home for your children. Start where you are, but be aware of entrapment. You can be trapped by your own desires. And we don't always have to have the Tuscan homes. God has given us everything. Let's learn how to use the grass, the wood, and the mud and the clay to create our own way of building. Anybody who does not know about Ndebele, Google Ndebele and then put space homes. You will see beautiful homes, very, very beautiful. Those mamas learned the skill of using what God has given to build beautiful homes, and they paint them with this beautiful Ndebele art that has become world famous today. They live in honorable, beautiful homes, not Tuscan, but honorable, beautiful homes. There is nothing wrong with our architecture. Sometimes we take loans because we're wanting to have Western architecture that we enslave ourselves. 20 years of paying that loan, if not more. 20 years of your life, do you know what 20 years really means of being enslaved? You can't even live your dream because now I need to pay back this thing. Our mamas don't even do that. They do using the resources that God has given them. And they build amazing, beautiful, honorable homes. I love them personally, I believe. So let's invest our time in developing Africa. Let's invest our time in learning from our ancestors, our people who have gone before us, to say, what was it about things that they did? The architecture that we have works for our climate, is great. Yes, sometimes during the rain, if you don't have the right nice stuff. So mix what you are learning from West and take this. Any architect who's listening to this, can we have solutions that works for us? Roads that work for us? learn. Let's not always think that anything Western is the best solution. You know, we need to have our own architecture. If you come to the land of the Arabs, anything that you see that they do has a signature that this is Arab land. We are obsessed with, we want skyscrapers. Why do you want skyscrapers? I mean, it's just additional stuff. No, we don't need skyscrapers. We need things that can work for us to achieve. Skyscraper does not necessarily mean that you are now the latest. It's a me too. It does not necessarily mean it works for you. Why do you want skyscrapers? They didn't have enough land. That's why they had to go up. And yes, please go up if you need to. You know, but do you need to invest so many millions doing all of these skyscrapers instead of building an architect that works for you? What is our architect that works for us as Africans? Honestly, there's too much wastage, in my opinion, sometimes with our own ideology that is informed by Western versus our own indigenous greatness. Google Ndebele art, please. You'll be surprised. In South Africa, it's one of the greatest things that I've seen as far as just architects. And there's so many other even tribes that have beautiful homes. Even in Zimbabwe, I've seen some beautiful homes built by these mamas, our women power that we have in the continent. In a nutshell, as I told you, I'm a serial optimist to a fault, and I still believe Africa will achieve its greatness. A large part of that is happening already. There's so many. There's a young man in South Africa who has designed an electric car. I mean, I could not believe when I saw that. Electric car in South Africa. So there is so much of that. Nigerians are manufacturing their own cars. There's so much of the thing that there's a lot that is happening. Let's embrace it. Let's believe. I'd rather buy that a Nigerian car than buy a German car, because it will go into Africa and it will make that manufacturer great and he can compete in the world. And one day we will probably export to the rest of the world. Moss, thank you for the opportunity, my friend. Great days are ahead of us. If God is for us, truly, who can be against us?
Thank you so much, Mott. It's been a privilege having you on the podcast. And definitely, this is not the last time that I'm going to have you on the podcast, because there's just so much and life keeps on moving. And I believe that in the next chapter of your life, there will be more experiences that we need to bring back to our audience so that everyone can benefit even as we grow together as a collective. To our audience, thank you so much for being here with us. I believe that you've benefited a lot from the talk, and I believe there are lots of notes that you're going to go away with. So until the next episode, this has been Moses Chavi, your host. Please make sure that you like the podcast and the episode and share it within your networks. In that way, we get more audience and we also get the message that we are trying to present, reach out to so many other people. So until next time, see you. Thank you.